Chapter 18. A Peculiar Calling. For a moment after Egwene descended, no one else moved, and then the Andorans and Murandians headed for the sitters almost as one. Apparently a girl Amarlin, a girl puppet and figurehead, held no interest, not with ageless faces in front of them that at least said they actually were speaking to Aes Sedai. Two or three lords and ladies clustered around each sitter, some thrusting their chins demandingly, others diffidently bending their necks, yet every one insistent on being heard. The sharp breeze whisked away the mist of their breath and fluttered cloaks forgotten in the importance of asking their questions. Shiriam was buttonholed, too, by red-faced Lord Donal, who blustered and jerked bows by turns. Egwene pulled Shiriam away from the narrow-eyed man. "Find out discreetly all you can about these sisters and tower guards in Andor," she whispered hastily. As soon as she released the woman, Donal reclaimed her. Shiriam actually looked put upon, but her frown disappeared quickly. Donal blinked uneasily as she began questioning him. Romanda and Lilaine gazed at Egwene through the crowd with faces carved from ice, but each had acquired a pair of nobles who wanted something. Reassurance that there was no hidden trick in Egwene's words, perhaps. How they would hate doing that, but dodge and duck as they would, and they would, there was no way to really avoid that reassurance without repudiating her on the spot. Even those two would not go that far. Not here. Not publicly. Swan slipped close to Egwene, features set in meekness. Except that her eyes darted, maybe looking for Romanda or Lilaine coming to seize them where they stood, and forget law, custom, propriety, and who was watching. "Shine, Chunla," she all but hissed in a whisper. Egwene nodded, but her eyes searched for Talmanis. Most of the men and some of the women were tall enough to hide him. With everyone shifting about, she went up on her toes. Where had he gone to? Seagun planted herself in front of her, fists on her hips, eyeing Swan doubtfully. Egwene let her heels down hurriedly. The Amarlin could not bob about like a girl at a dance looking for a boy. A rosebud unfolding, calm, serenity. Drat all men! A slender woman with long dark hair, Seagun seemed to have been born petulant, her full mouth fixed in a pout. Her dress was good blue wool and made for warmth, but it had far too much vivid green embroidery across her bosom, and her gloves were bright enough for a tinker. She looked Egwene up and down, pursing her lips, with as much incredulity on her face as she had given Swan. "What you said about the novice book," she said abruptly. "Were you meaning any woman of any age at all? Any can become Aes Sedai, then?" A question close to Egwene's heart, and an answer she dearly wanted to give, along with a box on the ear for the doubt. But just then a small gap in the flow of people showed her Talmanis near the back of the pavilion, talking with Pelivar. They stood stiffly, mastiffs not quite ready to show teeth, yet they were keeping a watch to make sure no one came close enough to overhear what they had to say. "Any woman of any age at all, daughter," she agreed absently. "Pelivar?" "Thank you," Seagun said, and haltingly added, "Mother." She sketched a curtsy, the barest hint of one, before hurrying off. Egwene stared after her. Well, it was a beginning. Swan snorted. "I don't mind sailing the fingers of the dragon in the dark if I must," she muttered half under her breath. "We discussed that. We weighed the dangers. And anyway, there doesn't seem to be a gull's last dinner for choice. But you have to set a fire on deck just to make things interesting. Netting lionfish isn't enough for you. You have to stuff a prickle back down your dress, too. You aren't content trying to wade a school of silver pike," Egwene broke in. "Swan, I think I should tell Lord Bryn you're head over heels in love with him. It's only fair that he know, don't you agree?" Swan's blue eyes bulged, and her mouth worked, but all that came out was a sort of gobbling. Egwene patted her shoulder. "Your eyes said die, Swan. Try to maintain at least a little dignity, and try to find out about those sisters in Andor." The crowd parted again. She saw Talmanis in a different place, but still on the edge of the pavilion, and alone now. Trying not to hurry, she walked in his direction, leaving Swan still gobbling. A pretty black-haired serving man, whose bulky woolen breeches could not quite hide neatly turned calves, offered Swan a steaming silver cup from a tray. Other servants were moving about with other silver trays. Refreshment was being offered, if a bit late. It was much too late for the kiss of peace. She did not hear what Swan said as she snatched a cup, but from the way the fellow jerked and started bobbing bows, he had received sharp shards of her temper at the least. Egwene sighed. Talmana stood with arms folded, observing the goings-on with an amused smile that did not reach his eyes. He seemed poised to explode into motion, but his eyes were tired. At her approach he made a respectful leg, but there was a wry touch to his voice when he said, "You changed a border today." He gathered his cloak against the icy breeze. "It has always been fluid between Andor and Murundi, no matter what maps say, but Andor has never come south in such numbers before. Except for the Aiel War and the White Cloak War, anyway, but they were only passing through then. Once they have been here a month, new maps will show a new line. Look at the Murandians scramble, fawning over Pelavar and his companions as much as they do the sisters. They are hoping to make new friends for the new day." To Egwene, trying to conceal her careful watch on those who might be watching her, it seemed that all of the nobles, Murandian and Andoran, were intent on the sitters, crowding around them. In any case, she had slightly more important matters in mind than borders, to her, if not to the nobles. Except for brief moments, none of the sitters were visible beyond the tops of their heads. Only Halima and Swan seemed to notice her, and a babble like that of a flock of excited geese filled the air. She lowered her voice and chose her words carefully. "Friends are always important, Talmanis. You've been a good friend to Matt, and I think to me. I hope that hasn't changed. I hope you've not told anyone what you shouldn't." Light, she was anxious, or she would not have been so direct. Next, she would come right out and ask what he and Pelavar had been talking about. Luckily, he did not laugh at her for a blunt-tongued village woman, though he might have been thinking it. He studied her seriously before speaking, in a soft voice. He also knew caution. Not all men gossip. "Tell me, when you sent Matt south, did you know what you would do here today?"
"How could I know that 2 months ago?"
"No, Aes Sedai aren't omniscient, Talmanis." She had hoped for something that would put her in the place she was, had planned for it, but she had not known, not back then. She also hoped he did not gossip. Some men did not. Romanda started toward her with a firm stride and a frozen face, but Arathel intercepted her, catching the yellow sitter's arm and refusing to be put off, despite Romanda's astonishment.
"Will you at least tell me where Matt is?" Talmanis asked. "On his way to Camelin with the daughter heir?
Why are you surprised?
A serving woman will speak to a soldier when fetching water from the same stream, even when he is a horrible dragon sworn," he added dryly.
Light! Men really were inconvenient at times. The best of them found ways to say exactly the wrong thing at the wrong moment, to ask the wrong question, not to mention inveigling serving women into prattle. So much easier if she could just lie, but he had given her plenty of room within the oaths. Half the truth would suffice and keep him from herring off to Ebu Dar, maybe less than half. Over in the far corner of the pavilion, Swan stood conversing with a tall young redhead with curled moustaches, who was eyeing her as dubiously as Segan had. Nobles usually knew the look of Aes Sedai, but he held only a part of Swan's attention. Her gaze constantly flickered toward Egwene. It seemed to shout, loud as conscience, easier, expedient, what it was to be Aes Sedai. She had not known about today, only hoped. Egwene expelled an irritated breath. Burn the woman. "He was in Ebu Dar the last I heard," she muttered. "But he must be hurrying north as fast as he can by now. He still thinks he has to save me, Talmanis, and Matrim Cawthon wouldn't miss the chance to be on the spot so he can say I told you so." Talmanis did not look at all surprised. "I thought it might be so," he sighed. "I have felt something for weeks now. Others in the band have too. Not urgent, but always there,
as if he needed me, as if I should look south anyway. It can be peculiar, following a Taviran.
I suppose it can, she agreed, hoping none of her incredulity showed.
It was strange enough to think of Matt the Wastrel as leader of the Band of the Red Hand, much less as Taviran, but surely a Taviran had to be present nearby at least to have any effect.
Matt was wrong about you needing rescue. You never had any intention of coming to me for help, did you?
He still spoke softly, but she looked around hurriedly anyway. Swan was still watching them, and so was Halima. Piter stood much too close to her, puffing and preening and stroking his mustaches. From the way he stared down her dress, he had not mistaken her for a sister, that was certain. But she was giving him only half her mind, darting sidelong glances in Egwene's direction while she smiled up at him warmly. Everyone else appeared occupied, and no one stood close enough to hear.
The Ammerlin seat could hardly go running for sanctuary, now could she?
But there have been times it's been a comfort knowing you were there, she admitted, reluctantly. The Ammerlin seat was hardly supposed to need a bolt hole, but it could do no harm so long as none of the sitters knew.
You have been a friend, Talmanis. I hope that continues. I truly do.
You have been more open with me than I expected, he said slowly. So I will tell you something. His face did not change. To any watcher, he must have seemed as casual as before, but his voice dropped to a whisper. I have had approaches from King Roadron about the band. It seems he has hopes of being Murindi's first real king. He wants to hire us. I would not have considered it normally, but there is never enough coin, and with this feel of Matt needing us, it might be better if we remain in Murindi. Clear as good glass, you are where you want to be and have everything in hand.
He fell silent as a young serving woman curtsied to offer mulled wine. She wore finely embroidered green wool and a cloak plush with spotted rabbit. Other servants from the camp were helping out now as well, no doubt for something to do besides stand and shiver. The young woman's round face was decidedly pinched from the cold. Talmanis waved her off and pulled his cloak back around him, but Egwene took a silver cup to gain a moment for thought. Truly there was little need for the band any longer. Despite all the muttering, the sisters took their presence as a matter of course now, dragon-sworn or not. They no longer feared an attack, and there had been no real need to use the band's presence to prod them into moving since leaving Salidar. The only true purpose Shen An Kalhar served now was to draw recruits into Bryn's army, men who thought two armies meant a battle and wanted to be on the side with the greatest numbers. She had no need of them, but Talmanis had acted as a friend, and she was Ammerlin. Sometimes friendship and responsibility pushed in the same direction. As the serving woman moved off, Egwene laid a hand on Talmanis's arm.
You must not do that. Even the band can't conquer all of Murindi by itself, and every hand will be against you. You know very well the one thing that makes Murandians stand together as foreigners on their soil. Follow us to Tar Valon, Talmanis. Matt will come there, I have no doubt of that.
Matt would not really believe she was the Ammerlin until he saw her wearing the stole in the White Tower.
Roadron is no fool, he said placidly. All he wants us to do is sit and wait. A foreign army, without Aes Sedai, and nobody knowing what it is up to. He should not have much trouble uniting the nobles against us. Then, so he says, we quietly slip across the border. He thinks he can hold on to them afterward.
She could not stop a touch of heat entering her voice.
And what is to stop him betraying you? If the threat goes away without a fight, his dream of a united Murindi might too.
The fool man seemed amused.
I am not a fool either. Roadron cannot be ready before spring. This lot would never have stirred from their manors if the Andorans had not come south, and they were on the march before the snows began. Before then, Matt will find us. If he is coming north, he must hear of us. Roadron will have to be satisfied with whatever he has managed by then. So if Matt does intend to go to Tar Valon, I may see you there yet.
Egwene made a vexed sound. It was a remarkable plan, the sort of thing Swan might devise, and hardly a scheme she thought Roadron Almaric Do Araloa a Naloi could carry off. The fellow was said to be so dissolute he made Matt look wholesome. But then it was hardly a scheme she would have believed Roadron could think up. The only certainty was that Talmanis had made up his mind. "I want your word, Talmanis, that you won't let Roadron pull you into a war." Responsibility. The narrow stole around her neck seemed to weigh 10 times more than her cloak. "If he moves sooner than you think, you will leave whether or not Matt has joined you." "I wish I could promise, but it is not possible," he protested. "I expect the first raid against my foragers 3 days at most after I start moving away from Lord Bryn's army. Every lordling and farmer will think he can pick up a few horses in the night, give me a pinprick, and run off to hide." "I'm not talking about defending yourself, and you know it," she said firmly. "Your word, Talmanis, or I will not allow your agreement with Roadron." The only way to stop it was to betray it, but she would not leave a war in her wake, a war she had started by bringing Talmanis here. Staring at her as if for the first time, he finally bent his head. Strangely, that seemed more formal than his bow had. "It will be as you say, Mother. Tell me, are you sure you are not Taviran, too?" "I am the Ammerlin Seat," she replied. "That is quite enough for anyone." She touched his arm again. "The light shine on you, Talmanis." His smile nearly touched his eyes this time. Inevitably, despite their whispers, their talk had been noticed, maybe because of their whispers. The girl who claimed to be Ammerlin, a rebel against the White Tower, in conversation with the leader of 10,000 Dragonsworn. Had she made Talmanis's scheme with Roadron harder or easier? Was war in Murundi less likely or more? Swan and her bloody law of unintended consequences. 50 gazes followed her, then darted away as she moved through the crowd, warming her fingers on her cup. Well, most darted away. The sitters' faces were all ageless Aes Sedai serenity, but Lelaine might have been a brown-eyed crow watching a fish struggle in the shallows, while Romanda's slightly darker eyes could have drilled holes through iron. Trying to keep a watch on the sun outside, she made a slow circuit through the pavilion. The nobles were still importuning sitters, but they moved from one to another as if seeking better answers, and she began to notice small things. Donal paused on his way from Janya to Moria, bowing low to Aemlyn, who acknowledged him with a gracious nod. Sean, turning away from Takima, curtsied deeply to Pelivar and received a slight bow in return. There were others, always a Murandian deferring to an Andoran, who responded just as formally. The Andorans tried to ignore Bryn except for the odd scowl, but any number of Murandians sought him out, one by one and well away from everyone else, and from the directions their eyes went, it was plain they were discussing Pelivar, or Arathel, or Aemlyn. Perhaps Talmanis had been right. She received bows and curtsies too, though none so deep as those given Arathel and Pelivar and Aemlyn, much less the sitters. Half a dozen women told her how thankful they were that matters had been resolved peacefully, though in truth almost as many made non-committal noises or shrugged uneasily when she expressed the same sentiment, as though they were uncertain it all would end peacefully. Her assurances that it would were met with a fervent, "The light send it so," or a resigned, "If the light wills." 4 called her mother, 1 without hesitating first. 3 others said that she was quite lovely, that she had beautiful eyes, and that she had a graceful carriage, in that order. Suitable compliments, perhaps, for Egwene's age, but not her station. At least she found 1 unalloyed pleasure. Segan was not alone in being intrigued by her announcement concerning the novice book. Plainly that was why most of the women spoke to her in the first place. After all, the other sisters might be in rebellion against the tower, but she claimed to be the Ammerlin Seat. Their interest had to be strong to overcome that, though no one wanted to let it show. Arathel made the inquiry with a frown that put more creases in her cheeks. Aemlyn shook her graying head at the answer. Blocky Shan asked, followed by a sharp-faced Andoran lady named Nagara, then a pretty big-eyed Murandian called Jennet, and others. None wanted to know for herself. Several made that clear quickly, especially the younger women, but before long every single noblewoman there had asked, and several servants as well, under cover of offering more spiced wine. 1, a wiry woman named Nildra, had come from the Aes Sedai camp. Egwene felt quite pleased with the seed she had planted there. She was not so pleased with the men. A few spoke to her, but only when they came face to face and seemed to have no other choice. A murmured word about the weather, either praising the end of the drought or deploring the sudden snows, a muttered hope that the bandit problem would end soon, perhaps with a significant look toward Talmanis, and they slipped away like greased pigs. A bear of an Andoran by the name of Makaran tripped over his own boots to avoid her. In a way, it was hardly surprising. The women had the justification, if only to themselves, of the novice book, but the men had only the thought that being seen conversing with her might tar them with the same brush. It was really quite discouraging. She did not care what the men thought about novices, but she very much wanted to know if they were as fearful as the women that this would come to blows in the end. Fears like that could fulfill themselves very easily. At last she decided there was only one way to find out. Pellivar turned from taking a fresh cup of wine from a tray and started back with a muffled oath to keep from bumping into her. Had she stood any closer, she would have had to stand on his boots. Hot wine splashed over his gloved hand and ran down under his coat sleeve, producing a curse not so muted. Tall enough to loom over her, he made a good job of it. His scowl belonged on a man wanting to send an annoying young woman briskly out of his way, or on a man who had nearly stepped on a red adder. She held herself erect and focused on an image of him as a small boy up to no good. That always helped. Most men seemed to feel it. He muttered something, it might have been a polite greeting or another oath, and dipped his head slightly, then tried to step around her. She sidestepped to stay in front of him. He moved back, and she followed. He began to look hunted. She decided to try putting him at ease before pressing the important question. She wanted answers, not more mumbling. "You must be pleased to hear that the daughter heir is on her way to Camelin, Lord Pellivar." She had heard several of the sitters mention that. His face went blank. "Elaine Trakand has a right to put in her claim to the Lion Throne," he replied in a flat voice. Egwene's eyes widened, and he stepped back again, uncertainly. Perhaps he thought her angry over the absence of her title, but she barely noticed that. Pellivar had supported Elaine's mother in her claim for the throne, and Elaine had been sure he would support her, too. She spoke of Pellivar fondly, like a favorite uncle. "Mother," Swan murmured at her elbow, "we must leave if you want to be sure of reaching the camp before sunset." She managed to put considerable urgency into those quiet words. The sun had passed its peak. "This is no weather to be in the open at nightfall," Pellivar said hurriedly. "If you will excuse me, I must make ready to leave." Shoving his cup onto the tray of a passing servant, he hesitated before halfway making a leg, and stalked off with the air of a man who had wriggled free of a trap. Egwene wanted to grind her teeth with frustration. What did the men think of their agreement? If it could be called that, the way she had forced it on them. Arathel and Aemlyn had more power and influence than most of the men, yet it was Pellivar and Cúlhan and the like who rode with the soldiers. They could still make this flare up in her face like a barrel of lamp oil. "Find Shiriam," she growled, "and tell her to get everyone mounted now, no matter what it takes." She could not give the sitters a night to think about what had happened today, to plan and plot. They had to be back in camp before the sun went down.